This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Sonia Purnell, very generously discussing an amazing book she's just published, Kingmaker, Pamela Harriman's Astonishing Life of Power, Seduction, and Intrigue. Churchill's not enough. The war is not enough. Avril Harriman's not enough. Pamela Harriman is principal in Bill Clinton's reinvention. A defeated governor of Arkansas comes to Pamela Harriman in some fashion in the 1980s, I believe in 1980 itself, and Pamela sees the future, and she acts upon it. What does she do for Bill Clinton?
She makes him believe in himself again. I mean, he said after losing the governorship in 1980 that he thought maybe politics was all over for him, that he had messed it up so badly, there was no comeback. But she had this mantra, which she said to Clinton at the time, you know, you have to fail to succeed. Failure helps success, ultimately, as long as you learn from it. So she told him that, but she also realized that here was a man with a messy private life, which she understood completely. She saw that very clearly. A patchy electoral record, sure. He wasn't well known in Washington. He didn't know the right people often, although she did. But behind all of that was someone who had an extraordinary charisma. I mean, really hugely powerful charisma, but also an ability to decipher the political landscape, to synthesize policies in a really impressive way. So she didn't see a hick state governor, as some people called it. She saw someone with enormous potential who needed a bit of tutoring, a bit of mentoring, a bit of polishing, and certainly fundraising, and also someone who just believed in him. And she positioned herself back then in 1980 and for the next 12 years as that person. They became very close friends, I should add.
The TV part of their relationship, Bill Clinton instructed her how to conduct herself. You mentioned at one point she was restrained on television. How so? And what did he teach her?
Well, it's very interesting. She found TV quite scary. She couldn't see the audience. And so what she did when she was nervous would go into a sort of almost Churchillian delivery, a bit halting, a bit slow, a bit too hesitant, a bit sort of stentorian, completely not right for TV. He said to her, talk to TV like you talk to me over lunch. Relax a little. Be yourself a bit more. At one point, she was even going to cancel a TV interview. She was so scared. And he gave her confidence. So this was a two-way thing here. And that's partly why they became such good friends, because they could help each other. And he could also verse her more and more into American politics, which is where she loved that world. She loved Washington, and she loved the cut and thrust of American politics. And he helped induct her in that.
She's raising money. She's using the N Street Palace as a meeting place. And on the way out, the donors have a silver tray, I imagine, something like that. Please deposit your check for $250,000. Thank you very much. See you next week. All very wonderful. But in 1986, Avril Harriman dies. He's a very senior figure in his 90s at this point, so I forgive him passing on. Pamela, however, has a moment now to take charge of the political side, and the Democrats do very well in 1986. I believe they regain the Senate. How did she see herself in the Democratic Party at that time?
I think Avril dying was very sad for her, but it also released her, gave her much more time. She had been incredibly devoted to his care while he was, you know, ailing and died very ill. He had cancer. After that, she had much more time and she could see. She no longer had to pretend it was all about Avil. It now could be her calling the shots, saying that the Democrats needed a really high-tech TV studio like the Republicans. The Democrats needed to have counter-attack ads against the Republicans. But the Democrats also had to choose the right people, both for the House and the Senate, but most particularly for the White House. And so she had these issues evenings in her house where candidates would basically come along and basically be tried out by her in her drawing to find out how good they were under pressure with questions fired at them, how engaging they could be, how broad based they could be. And slowly but steadily, she became the one who seemed to call the shots as to this person is going to work or this person isn't. So you mentioned the 1986 elections being very good for the Democrats in the Senate. Sure enough, that is the case. And a lot of those successful senators were quite adamant afterwards that they owed their success in large part to Pamela tutoring them, pushing them forward, giving them policy ideas, and really just making a difference to the whole Democratic electoral machine.
Gorbachev becomes the leader of a failing Soviet Union in 1985, I believe. And his conversation, letters, meetings with Ronald Reagan become the declining years of the Soviets and the rise of hope without a nuclear confrontation. Pamela Harriman is right inside. I have a photograph of Pamela Harriman holding Mrs. Gorbachev's hand in Georgetown, Raisa Gorbachev. Why? Why were they together? And what did Pamela say to the Gorbachevs?
This is yet another extraordinary strand to Pamela's life. For a long time, both while Avril was alive and after he died, she believed and argued vehemently that the only way to solve, to bring the Cold War to an end, was to start negotiations from a position of strength, absolutely, but to start negotiations with the Russians, with Moscow, to open those channels again. And in 1983, she had travelled with Avril, then well into his 90s, could barely hear, to see the then leader of the Soviet Union Andropov. Andropov told them, yes, it was time to open those channels of communication once more. He was terrified of a Cold War happening, of a nuclear war, happening by accident. And Pamela and Avril came back with that message to Washington. The Russians knew the role that she had played. And indeed, that conversation didn't lead to anything immediately, but certainly alerted the Americans to a greater willingness on the part of the Russians to talk and to make concessions. That did eventually lead to a treaty where nuclear weapons were reduced, or certain type and certain section of nuclear weapons were reduced. That was an agreement between Moscow and Washington. And the Gorbachev now being the Soviet leader, a protege of Andropov, came over to sign that treaty. And they were so in sort of awe of Pamela's involvement in bringing that about that they wanted to single her out of all the people in Washington to say thank you. And that is why Reza Gorbachev, who'd been invited by Nancy Reagan to the White House — she wasn't very keen on going there, by the way, she never got on with Nancy Reagan — she specifically asked to go to Pamela's house for coffee. And you see that picture that you see of them holding hands in the book was that day. It was quite a coup for Pamela. The Gorbachevs were like rock gods at the time in Washington. Everyone wanted to meet them.
The Soviet Union ends under George H.W. Bush's administration. Did she have a relationship with the Bush family?
She did, but I wouldn't say, funny enough, I think that's one family one sort of political dynasty she wasn't particularly close to. She had known other Republicans rather better, I think, than the Bushes by that point. That wasn't an administration where she was constantly in and out of the White House.
And then the decision made by Mr. and Mrs. Clinton, Hillary and Bill, to run for the presidency in 92, despite the fact that George H.W. Bush had enjoyed a near, I believe, 80% approval rating after the Gulf War. Clinton enters the fray. Many larger than life names in the Democratic Party defer their running, including Mario Cuomo of New York. And Pamela Harriman, I have to believe, was part of Bill's inspiration. Is that correct? Did she urge him on to run against a popular president?
That's absolutely right. There are two things I'd say about that. First of all, she equated the position of the Democrats at that point to Churchill's experience at the end of the war. So Bush's ratings were so high because he had succeeded in the war in Kuwait. But she said, the thing is, you know, Churchill was this great war victor in 1945, and yet he lost the election because people's minds had moved on to other things, usually their own personal lives. That's where the whole idea of it's the economy, stupid, came from, really, in Clinton's campaign. We know how successful that was. And that's how the Labour Party had won in 1945. They talked about housing and health and schools and future. The future was where it all was. And so she was very much pushing the Democrat Party towards that. Bill Clinton himself, giving him belief that he could actually win. He was the right man at the right moment. And if you don't believe me how important she was, then, you know, ask Bill Clinton, because he will say to you, oh, yeah, you know, a very large part of the reason why I reached the White House was because Pamela Harriman helped me.
Surprise, Bill Clinton is elected president of the United States when we come back.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.